ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
He kōna e purangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
Hi, this is comedian and depressed alcoholic James Nokise, and you're listening to Eating Fried Chicken in the Shower, a podcast about headspace and happiness. From my safe space, the shower, with fried chicken. This episode, I'm talking to comedian, actor, television host, and marching girl, Hayley Sproul. We'll chat about choices on medication.
I think I was just overwhelmed and really sick of dealing with it. And I just would wake up with dread, you know, that in your chest. Mm. And I'd go to bed with doom. And I'd wake up with dread.
Choices of a performer.
Since I could remember being able to form sentences in my head, the goal has always been to go, what's the funny situation and how can I draw attention to it in order to make these people around me laugh?
And choices on social media.
It's funny, like, when I talk about my social media inbox, it's truly a mix of, like, leery creeps and, like, desperate women being like, I watched your doco.
Oh, my God. Some of this will get a bit real. The language, the subjects. So make sure you're in the safe space with your comfort food. And join us, Eating Fried Chicken in the Shower. Hi, and welcome to Eating Fried Chicken in the Shower. I'm James Nokise, and today with me, I have Hayley Sproul.
That's my name.
who I have known, I've thought about this, and it makes me feel very old. I've known you since you were in drama school.
Wow. You said that in a way that a man would say, I've known you since you were in primary school.
Yes, I did. I said it in a much creepier, older man's way. I apologize profusely.
When did we meet?
Like, because we met through mutual friends.
Probably at Downstage?
Yeah, I think so. Like
down those days?
Yeah. Oh, that's right. We did that project for Downstage. For our listeners who are like, what the hell are these two on about? Hayley and me met each other in the arts in Wellington in the scene there, but then we've also gone to several festivals.
Yes.
Edinburgh a couple of times. You took a solo show there, and you've taken your incredible marching band.
Well,
you've gone as part
of my marching team.
Your marching
team.
Not a band. Sorry,
we don't play instruments.
Don't play instruments. Yeah, no, you just walk very professionally.
Wow, thank you. This interview's over. Yeah, we do. It's fancy walking. It's so funny. For so many years, I've tried to sell people, like, marching is so much more. Yeah. And then when you break it down, you're like, I am walking and singing with a bunch of women.
But it's very fancy.
Like, it's fancy.
You're
walking
at the tattoo.
Yeah.
You're in the castle.
Yeah, I've performed at the Edinburgh Tattoo 3 times now.
Yeah. Are you, like, of all the comedians in New Zealand, are you the most tattoo experienced?
I think I'm the most heavily tattooed, for sure.
Yeah.
In fact, I don't know any other, I don't know any other marching comedians or actors even.
That's true. You're really breaking ground.
Yeah. I'm a pioneer.
Yeah, you're a maverick.
Thank you so much.
You're a maverick marcher.
I'm going to put that on my business card. Maverick marcher.
Maverick marcher. Are you like, because that's the fun thing is that because I come back to New Zealand, not being based here anymore, and I get to see people like you who I've known and been in the trenches of like Edinburgh with.
Oh, yeah.
And you're kind of famous
now.
Don't
say it.
You're bus famous.
I am bus famous.
You might not be household name famous. I'll give you that because I don't know, but you are bus famous.
I am bus famous. I'm heavily bus famous.
Yeah.
Those buses are everywhere, and they're like the big double-decker ones in Auckland, so that's literally like a huge Hayley goes by. And sometimes I'm on another bus, sort of sitting there as one goes by going.
Are people on the bus, like, looking at it and then turning around going, I think the bus lady is behind us.
I think that's her. I feel like I don't actually ever get recognised.
Yeah.
Honestly, really, very seldom. Mostly children. And I think that's Bake Off related. Like, kids love Bake Off.
Because you're like, you got Bake Off, you got Have You Been Paying Attention? Golden Boy. Yeah, so that's a lot of prime time.
Yeah, 3 TV shows.
Yeah, man.
A bit greedy. But I always feel like in those things, like, Have You Been Paying Attention is like the most prominent one at the moment because it's on every week.
Mm.
And in there, I'm wearing these like bright suits and I've got all this hair extensions in and full makeup. And generally, like, You're lucky. I've slapped a bit of mascara on for you, James.
No, it's very much appreciated. I mean, it doesn't do much for radio, but visually, like the clips are going to really pop.
This is really good. This is where you want to watch it.
Yeah. And what chicken, my newly famous friend, have you bought for us?
Well, I think we've gone with Korean fried chicken.
Excellent.
Oh, no, look. It's Taiwanese.
Yes, it is Taiwanese.
We made a last minute change, I will say.
That's all right.
I requested karaage, but it's too early in the day, apparently, for karaage. So we've got Taiwanese chicken.
Excellent.
And we had a selection of seasonings to choose from.
Great.
And I chose the chef's special.
Awesome. You have no idea what's in that, do you, mate?
I think it looks really good.
It does. I like that it's called Kai. Kai Eatery.
It is Kai.
Yeah, Kai Eatery, which is great because, of course, that's the Māori word for food. It is the Samoan word for something else. But
what is it, the Samoan word for?
Oh, look, I don't know if we can put that on the broadcast, but.
Oh, really?
Let's just say it's an ongoing joke between the Māori and the Samoans.
Oh, beautiful.
Oh, it is good.
Oh! Chef's special?
Boom, chef's special. Well done, Hayley Sprout.
I want to say, it's kind of sweet.
Yeah, there is a sweetness there.
It's like, what's that word? Like nutmeggy.
Oh, okay.
Like warm, spiced baked goods herbs.
I'd almost lean towards like plum. Like there'd been some plum involved in the marination of this.
I'm suspicious there's been some plum involved.
No, I'm not suspicious. I'm just saying the sweetness of it lends itself towards like a plum or something.
I like these little envelopes I've put it in. You're really going to get your hands involved.
Mm.
It's good chicken.
It's good chicken. That's very good. Thank you, Kai Eatery. How are you finding all of the popularity and all that? Because even then when I mentioned it before, you were like, oh, no, I'm not that, you know, and that. But you kind of and it's cool to be like, do that Kiwi thing of downplay.
Humble pie.
But, you know, mentally, how's it all going with the exposure? You know, being more of a public person?
I think I'll always have it, like coming from a background in theatre, in fringiness, you know, that kind of hustle, I think I'll always be suspicious that it's going to leave. So I think that's why I'm always like, I'm not famous because I'm not like embedded into New Zealand's zeitgeist at all. I'm like a new arrival and it's just, I've arrived in quite a full-on way with three TV shows, you know? So I always feel like I don't ever sort of settle into the idea of it because I just know it's all going to go.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm just like, it's just a job. I'm just doing a job and I'm lucky at the moment and then it will all go and I'll go back to self-funding my solo shows at independent theatres around the world.
It's always waiting for you, mate. They're always there. Is it?
I don't know. I went to a theatre party recently and someone looked across the room and said, why are you here?
What?
It was a friend, and he definitely meant, like, why are you in Wellington?
Oh, right. But it was kind of like...
In my insecurities, I was like, these are not my people anymore. I've abandoned them.
You're TV now.
Yeah, I am. I'm happy to be.
Yeah. Is it, like, when you talk like that, are we talking, like, imposter syndrome levels, or... Is it more just a basic anxiety? Because I think a lot of people, regardless of what their job is, they kind of like, they have those moments of success and like it could all go.
Mm. Absolutely. I think it is I do feel a bit like an imposter because like two of my shows, just to keep reiterating that I've got three TV shows.
Oh, keep it.
two of them I host.
Yeah.
And that's not what I train to do. You know, like actor. Mm. I went to drama school. I've done comedy.
Mm.
And I've sort of just fallen into those roles, which, you know, lend themselves to performance and comedy.
Mm.
So I've always sort of gone, like, I'm not a real presenter. I didn't go to broadcasting school. I'm not Hilary Barry. Mm. She's famous, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But
give it time, mate. Give it time.
Oh, mate, me and Hilary get up here and make it done at the same time.
Boom.
I'm on my way out.
Do you want me to pick up that name, or do you want to...
Sorry, Hilary, I've just dropped you on the floor there. But, yeah, no, it's not... I mean, it's... It's not anxiety because to me it's not like it's real. Like it's just going to happen. And also like I seem to have landed quite heavily in television, which is not doing well. You know, like TV is not going to be around forever.
I don't think that's your fault.
Well, ask Twitter.
Oh, really? Really? Surely you're too, like, I don't know, I mean this in a patronising way, but surely you're too new to be getting the hard stuff. But do you get like...
Oh, yeah. I don't think anyone's immune.
Mm.
I get lots of it on Twitter, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I don't actually use Twitter. I just have an account, I think, because...
So people have a target?
Yeah. So I was like, you can message me here, I guess. But I think anyone on TV gets, especially women, will get a lot of messages that are horrible. It all started, I don't know if you know this, but I made a joke about Simon Bridges and abortions on 7 Days.
Okay.
And this was my like second ever TV appearance on 7 Days.
Mm-hmm.
And it just went like poof on Twitter of people... oh my God, the comments I got on Twitter were crazy. People were messaging my mum saying like that she should have aborted me. And
people were messaging your mum?
Yeah.
Oh no, that's not on.
Crazy, yeah.
That's nuts.
Uh-huh.
Because I always feel like parents, there is a bit of a, like, when it comes to the celebrity game, like maybe, you know, I know when politicians, people get a bit crazy about that stuff, but when it comes to like performers and entertainers, I feel like the family outside is a bit off.
It is a bit. And my mum can't help herself. She gets involved. She's very unprotective.
No. Oh, mum.
I know. And my rule is, like, never respond.
Yeah.
You know, you're sitting there, like, thinking of your witty comeback to be like... and it's never going to lead anywhere because it's just going to go back and forth. But every now and then my mum will comment. The best thing she's done is a guy messaged me. Am I allowed to swear?
Yeah, of course.
A guy messaged me and said, I'd so eat your asshole, you beautiful piece of ass. And head, which is really forward, right?
It's very forward.
Like, not only are we not sexually engaged with each other yet, but, like, we're just diving straight into ass play.
Yeah.
And I wasn't, you know.
Well, it's 2020.
It is 2020. I think, you know, I'm not shut off to the idea, but, you know, let's have a drink first while we get to meet each other.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he messaged me, and then I went on his profile, because I like to have a look at who these people are, just to go, oh, no, I'm okay. I don't need your opinion.
Mm.
And I went on, and he had... like his family tagged in his profile. So my including he had a wife.
Uh-oh.
And then everyone was saying to me, like, you should message his wife and say, your husband's been...
Mm.
And I was like, I don't want to take it that far. He's just being a dick. And he thinks that because I'm on TV, he has, you know, some kind of opening to say these things to me. But anyway, my mum messaged his mother directly saying, from one mother to another, this is what your son is doing online.
Oh, no, actually, I take it back. Awesome, mum.
It's full on,
eh? That's a power mum play, mum to mum.
She never heard back, but,
but
I feel like it was received.
Yeah. Is there a mental attrition to that?
Mm.
Is it wearying?
It's tiresome.
Mm.
I think, when I went... You know, with the 7 Days joke that I made, that was my first ever. Like, I didn't even tweet. And then that was my first kind of experience of that, like any kind of public sort of war, basically. And I found that quite difficult. And then once I was on telly more, and you get more of them, like every day I'll get a message that is inappropriate in some way.
Every day?
Every day.
Is that frustrating, or is it just water off a duck's back for you at this point?
Yeah, a little bit. It's just sort of, I don't really care. But, you know, like if someone talks about how unfunny I am or how annoying or they don't find, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
I find that a little insulting. Not insulting, that hurts a little bit more because that's maybe an insecurity of mine. You know, that I'm not funny enough for the job. As opposed to people being like, she's ugly, because then you're like, get fucked. No, I'm not.
Eating fried chicken in the shower, like the car map, but more food-focused.
What do you do for joy, then? What's, like that makes it sad or frustrated? What do you pick yourself up with, mate?
What do I do for joy? I exercise quite a lot.
Oh, yeah?
I keep a nice house. It's just like really quiet things. And one of the, you know, it's like no shock to like that with all comedians, we love socializing, we charge up, we love entertaining people, we're hungry for an audience at all times.
Mm-hmm.
But when I'm home, it's closed doors, man. Like I don't even invite people around that much. You know, I just have a nice home, a nice life, a cat, quite quiet, growing the plants like all millennials. So it's quite, just simple things.
Call up your mum.
Call my mum. I call my mum every day.
Get off Twitter. Yeah?
Yeah, I'm like, mum, leave it alone. Yeah, I talk to my mum every single day.
All right.
Yeah, all day. I often think about this, like, well, not a lot of my friends do.
Yeah.
Especially as we, like, get older and head into our 30s. ancient. But, you know, like life kind of goes on and you separate more and more as you build your own life from your family life.
Mm.
But no, I ring my mum every day. It just, even in the car, just being like, hey, what are you doing? I'm driving. Yeah, same.
What's it, do you have like, because we all do as artists, have a little bit of family guilt. Like, it's like, do you, what's your measure of that?
I don't have a lot. Only because my parents, bless them, have pushed us in this direction and supported us and encouraged us the whole time.
Mm.
Like my mum, I learned piano when I was 6 years old. Mm. And my mum, if my mum hadn't have, I'm not selling her like a pusher, but if she hadn't have been on me with my piano lessons, I wouldn't have kept on going, you know? And same with any time I've wanted to give up acting or performing because it was hard or I didn't have any money, they've always been like, no, keep going, keep practicing, keep getting better.
Yeah.
Get on the piano, do your scales.
Yeah, my family is not quite the same.
Right. So,
I told my dad, I think I'm going to give up this whole shebang. He'd be like, you know, the church is waiting for you.
And oh,
like,
the church.
Yeah, they would. My Samoan family, if I stopped doing all of this and told him I was training to be a minister, they would be like, yes, finally, God has got him. But more importantly, the money that he'll get from God getting him.
The money he'll get from God.
It's time.
No, my parents, they've always been kind of on board. Like, I love to think of my parents. My brother's been in bands his whole life.
Mm.
And I love my parents in heavy metal bands, like heavy.
Right.
And I love that my parents would just be at the gigs, in the mosh pit, you know, like right up against the speakers. Not their kind of music, but they're loving it and supporting it. Same, like, I've been naked on stage in front of my parents. I've told so many of my family and personal secrets on stage, and they just sit there like, woof, like, oh, that's full on, but we absolutely support it. Or I remember when I made Vanilla Medaka. I didn't even really ask my mum. It was about her and her family.
Mm.
And then she just came to opening night and was there the whole time being like, and I was like, oh, sorry. But they're just all for it, like anything that we do.
Yeah. I mean, my first play was about my parents' domestic violence, which I asked them about. I interviewed them because it was almost like verbatim some of the scenes. And they'd never talked about it. We'd never talked about it. The family had never talked about it. And then I just went around going, hi, I've written a play on the thing. But when they opened up, and then they kind of, the trauma, they kind of forgot that they'd told me what they told me because they were in the moment. Your play, Vanilla Medaka.
Medaka, yeah.
What was that about? Like, when you're talking with your mum, your mum's life.
Yeah. Well, it was about me being Māori, but feeling very disconnected from it because of the way that I look and the way that I was raised.
Kia ora, welcome.
Kia ora. it was kind of just a question that I had and was talking to Aaron about, and then we were talking to Takirua about it and they commissioned this play.
Mm.
And, it was about me losing my Māori grandmother and that kind of opening up the realisation that my Māoriness was also dead, and I was having this profound kind of like, oh no, sort of moment. So I made a show about that. Just about being disconnected, basically.
Yeah. Look, I can completely understand that. I mean, I'm semi-tanned now, but I remember when I first started. One of the weirder comments I got when I first started doing comedy was from my Samoan elders, not my family, the elders, because the way the whānau and the ainga are very similarly built up. And they said, oh, they're good comments, what you're saying, but we don't think it should be you saying it. I was 22.
Yeah.
And what you just said really knocked me, that you said, you know, my Māori side is dead.
Mm.
I don't know if I've ever heard anyone with Māori blood, with Māori heritage, say that.
Yeah.
Is that how you feel?
A little bit, yeah. It's definitely how I felt quite strongly.
Yeah.
I think that's changed because through making that work, I had to fight to be able to be Māori. So that similar to the comments that you received with your piece of work, a lot of the feedback from the show from some people in the Māori community was, what gives you the right to talk about this culture when you don't know it, you don't look like you represent it, you're entirely disconnected. And so I had to sort of fight to be able to say, I am Māori, I'm a different type of Māori, that is still that's still Māori. Like, it's still, it may not look like your version of it, or, you know, someone made a comment saying, like, you don't know what it's like to go to school and be discriminated against, you know, and that's something that Māori have to put up with. And my thing was like, I'm not telling that story. That's not my experience of being Māori. It's a different Māori life in a way.
Mm.
So, yeah, it definitely felt like, you know, it's that connecting point was my nana. And when she died, it just felt like, you know, that she doesn't come from a family that holds like a great understanding of the culture or anything like that. So once she was gone, it was kind of like, well, damn, she didn't teach my mum those things. And then my mum didn't teach me. And now I don't know anything. And I don't have the opportunity to ask anymore.
Mm.
So, yeah, I did feel a bit like it was dead. And then because the response of the work was amazing, because on one side you've got people who were going, that's me, you know, that really lost feeling oh, I understand that. And on the other side it was a lot of people saying, how dare you? And I think because that response was so overwhelming, it kind of has pushed me away from the investigation for quite a while.
Right.
So in terms of my Māoriness, it's not something that I really claim that often, or that I investigate, or that I even have thought about in a huge way, because it really terrified me and I felt unworthy and yeah, like I had no entitlement to even talk about it, even though I was talking about something that was very real for me and an experience that was, you know, based in fact and something that actually happened.
It's very interesting to talk to someone who has experienced very similar situation to what I've experienced in Samoanness. I don't think people truly grasp that when you have that blood connection, when it's your heritage, when your parent is clearly of the culture, to have someone turn around and then say to you, you are not of that culture, and you have no right to talk of the culture, and invalidate not simply your experience, but because of the way that Māoridom and Samoan and many other Pacific cultures are set up, to invalidate your heritage. Like, I know how I dealt with the pain, but you're my guest. How do you deal? Like, what is that pain to you?
I think, if I'm being honest, and I wish that I was, you know, I could say that I handled it better. I didn't. I cried a lot. I cried a lot. I shut down. I didn't confront a lot of the criticism about that was coming towards me, because, you know, I feel like people who are really connected to Māoridom, that I feel like they've just got a stronger stance, whereas I was floating in this kind of, you know, fluid unsurety of where I stood within that culture. So I felt like I didn't have the strength or the ability to, like, hold on to my belief and stand by my work. So I truly shut down. I mean, I never did the show again. I just put it in a suitcase and put it in my garage and was like, I don't ever want to do that again. Which was it's so terrible that I kind of let that happen, because at the end of the day, like, I let the sort of critical response overwhelm a huge amount of amazing conversation that came from the work. And not to mention, I mean, my mum and her sister's response to the work was, like, intense. And her whole family came down from where we're from, and from Tinupai, and watched in the front row, and they
Your
were...
Your family's from Tinupai?
Yeah.
Come on, man. Like, that's like...
That's where we come from. But they all came down, you know, and that whole, the whole end of the show... is my nana's coffin going down, and it being very, very funny, because someone, as they were juddering the ropes down, their phone fell out of their pocket underneath the coffin in the hole, and they were, like, laughing and crying. And so in a way, like, for a while I felt like, well, I've spoken on behalf of my family and they support it and that's all I need. But... yeah, I just didn't have the strength to fight for it.
That's trauma. What you're talking about is trauma, man.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. And I do. And when people ask me about being Māori, I do. I get really, like, a bit sort of defensive, or just shut off, or I just kind of shy away from it. Because, yeah, I guess I feel not... yeah, I just feel like I'm not entitled to say that.
Yeah.
Beyond privately ticking a box on a census or whatever.
But your family had your back?
Yeah, they did, in a big way.
Don't say fuck everyone else.
Yeah.
Hayley Sproul, why have I only just found out in the past hour that your father is a Samoan chief? How has this happened? Trust me, listeners, I'll find some way to spin this about mental health, but I need to know and you need to. The world needs to know, Hayley Sproul.
That's like, bizarre.
We were talking about your issues with Māori identity and coming to terms with that. But you're a Samoan chief's daughter, and I feel like that needs to be discussed.
Okay, so I know. So Craig Robert Sproul is the chief a chief of a Samoan village. I can't remember the name of it.
It better not be Lusuli'i, or I'm going to be really annoyed.
Oh my god, my dad might be listening, going, "It is."
It's like, oh, that means you're my chief's daughter. It's really weird.
So, so what happened was there was I can't remember what year it was. There was a tsunami or a.
Yeah, the tsunami.
The tsunami.
Yeah, yeah.
And it destroyed this village in Samoa. And this church was the main thing that kind of was destroyed in this community.
Yeah.
And my dad has a finance company and he does a lot of like charity work through some of his clients. And one of his clients came and was telling my dad about how this church had been destroyed and how it, you know, they had no money to fix it. And so my dad funded the rebuild of this church in this community, and then through his company. And then they invited him and my mum over because someone was having a wedding.
That's normally how it goes. Yeah, we don't do small weddings in Samoa.
No. And then, of course, my dad and my mum were invited, and they offered him this. This title of being a chief of their village. And then my favourite part of the whole thing is that one of the sort of main guys that my dad was involved in, he named their son Craig.
It's beautiful.
Craig.
That's
that poor young Samoan boy, Craig.
Look, there are worse Samoan names to have than Craig. All right. Look, I mean, if it's Craig and they're from New Zealand and named after the jam, okay, that's one thing. But Craig named after Craig who helped rebuild the church.
Yeah.
I mean, that's akin unto Jesus, really.
Yeah, I guess so.
I think I know the village you're talking about. I think you might be talking about Lalomano on the southern coast. Does that ring any bells?
No, I genuinely don't think I've ever been told what the name was. But it's odd. Yeah, I mean, it's so odd seeing my dad. My dad is like, he's got... like bluey green eyes, sandy blonde hair. He's just a lovely man. And to see him, you know, in the full garb and being welcomed into this community, it's like, it honestly makes me laugh. Like, it's so sweet in a way.
Have you ever thought of using that the next time someone tries to attack you over your Māori heritage?
I'm like, actually, I'm the daughter of a Samoan chief.
They're like, what?
His name's Craig.
His name's Craig. An ancient Samoan name.
Chief Craig, okay.
Yeah. Named after the All Black prop in the early 90s. Who was friends with Otto Brown? Another Samoan chief.
There you go.
There you go.
Question me now.
Yeah. I mean, Steve Hansen's a Samoan chief, so it's not the worst thing in the world.
I think they just hand them out willy-nilly.
Yeah, unless you're a Samoan comedian.
Yeah, there you go.
No, I've been told mine's coming from
you. You're waiting.
Yeah.
Eating fried chicken in the shower, wash off the trolls and feed up your soul, or whatever you have inside.
What's your level of anxiety? Like how do you... When you're functioning and going through... I know that there's a link between, you know, going fast and being active, and then anxiety is kind of like the backlash that you get from that. Like, what's yours?
Do you know, it's funny, like, I'm just saying then that I feel I've become more sure of myself as a person as I get older, but I've become a more anxious person. And maybe that's because I'm revealing that that's how it always was. Or maybe that's developing because of, you know, my lifestyle. I'm not sure, but... definitely, like, anxiety is in my family in a big way, and a bit of depression and that kind of stuff. And I always thought that wasn't me, and that this kind of energy that I have, which is always on edge and a bit bitey, was just sort of a personality trait. And then I think getting into this body of work, this kind of career, you know, in this line of work, it really feeds it, you know, which is just that lack of stability and fluid money. You just never know when it is, when it's not. You know, public eye critique, all those kind of things have definitely made it a lot worse. Mm. Got to a point where I medicated about 2 years ago, and then I just... It just like wasn't for me. I just start questioning like, what am I missing? What am I not feeling? What else has it taken away? So even though I felt a lot calmer, I lost a little bit of my edge. So I just thought, I think I'd rather have the anxiety as part of my life, and but still be able to be a bit more alert and make work basically, you know, and be who I am. But it's like, you know, it's ebbs and flows, really. Sometimes I just go through long periods of time where I just feel very, very chill, and then sometimes feel immensely overwhelmed.
I think people don't understand that medication isn't always an answer, but it's also not always not the answer.
No.
Like it's literally just, it works differently for different people and sometimes at different times.
Yeah. And it's sort of, I mean, I used it, I never really used it in my head as a long-term plan. I think I was just overwhelmed and really sick of dealing with it, and I just would wake up with dread, you know, that in your chest, and I'd go to bed with doom, and I'd wake up with dread, and I'd be like, that's boring. I've got nothing else. I genuinely have nothing to worry about, you know? And so I sort of went like, just short-term, I just want a little bit of a helping hand to get through it. And then I felt great, but a bit sort of, nah. So I felt ready to come off it, and I was, and I don't regret it, but it's just more just something that you, it just comes back into your life and you have to sort of handle it. And it's great. I mean, it's, we're so lucky we come from an industry which unfortunately is plagued with people with anxiety because of the, like, just the demands of the job, I guess. So it's, I've never felt isolated or alone or embarrassed or like, oh no, I could never tell anyone that, I was on edge, you know, today, so sorry if I'm not chatty or whatever. It's very, it's so open talking to people. It all, like, there's nothing, there's never been a time where I've felt like I had to hide it.
Have you found that being a comedian, being musical, that's helped with stuff? Like, because you're, the way you've talked about stuff today, you know, there's a bit of lightness to it. There's a bit of, you know, you use comedy in that traditional way of... You know, what does it mean to you to have those moments of joy?
I think it's the only way I know. Do you know what I mean? Like, I didn't choose to be a comedian. It just was always going to happen. You know, I didn't choose to be a performer. It was just, it sounds so cheesy, but it's like, that's just who I am.
You didn't choose the joke life. The joke life chose me,
bebe. But you know what I mean? Like, since I was a kid, I've been like this.
Right.
Since I could remember being able to form sentences in my head, the goal has always been to go, what's the funny situation and how can I draw attention to it in order to make these people around me laugh? And that's through primary school, high school, drama school, and now into my career. So it's not like I've consciously chosen comedy as the way to get through life and to handle things and to make money. It just was the only way.
Right.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, like I said before, with making comedy about hard issues, I fully am aware that comedy is not the escape of dealing with life. It's just one way.
There's an irreverence, I find.
Yeah.
That when you use comedy to talk about hard issues, it softens the issue enough that people listen. Like, do you find when you're, like, internally with, like, with your own issues, that if you use comedy on it, I know it sounds wanky, I know, I'm aware.
No, I'm listening.
If you use comedy on it and you find that irreverence, it helps you to just, you know, get out of bed or like make the coffee, you know.
It's a whole other kettle of fish, but I've got a lot of like reproductive issues, and I made this documentary about PCOS, which is...
I've got PCOS.
Yeah.
Ah.
Mate.
That's mate.
But the whole point is that... having this like lifelong thing that is honestly a pain in the ass, making comedy about it, it's just made it made my day-to-day existence with this condition manageable.
I know about PCOS. I don't think she'll mind me saying, because my wife hasn't. But for our listeners, can you explain what PCOS is.
It's polycystic ovarian syndrome. It's a very complicated condition where one of the symptoms is that you have cysts on your ovaries, but you don't always have to have it. Mm. But basically, it's all kind of centered around hormones and insulin, mm. and you produce too much testosterone as a result of these increased levels of insulin, which basically it makes you hairy, it makes you gives you acne, give you mood swings, it can make you infertile, it can make you gain weight. It's just really sort of like daily annoyances that it can provide. And I mean, I talk from the position of someone who doesn't want to have children, but beyond it being annoyance, it can be a real pain for people who want to have a baby.
Yeah.
You're looking me in the eye with that?
Yeah. But that's a different podcast,
that
ladies and gentlemen.
A different one. But anyway, it's for me, it is truly just one of those things that felt like a hard hand that I was dealt. Mm. And learning more about it, I really realised how much work I had to put into managing it, and I'm lazy, and I didn't want to put that work in. So I used comedy to kind of learn more and lighten it, and actually realise that it's all very doable and manageable, and there are worse things to have.
It is one of those, we were talking before about attrition, there's like another factor where there's not much research on it.
No, oh my gosh. I mean, I'm like, sure...
When you do a reference to a serious topic and you look at not just something like PCOS, but women's health, you kind of need to go in a reference so you don't scream.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've talked a lot about... I mean, I know that doctors have to learn a little bit about a lot, but there's truly... The frustrating thing is that you have to go and do that work yourself because... you don't get enough information, and people just sort of go, oh, PCOS, you've probably got some lumps on your ovaries, and we'll pop you on the pill and you'll be fine. Or you'll find it hard to have a baby, which it's not always true, you know. And people get told, and I hate this, or you won't be able to have children. And it's like, that's just not true. There's just, you just are taking maybe a wobblier path there, but yeah, people just sort of throw it out, and you're like, this is my entire life. This is my daily existence.
And that's also like that sentence. You know, a bit like you said before about like how, you know, feel like Māori is dead to you. That sentence, like, you won't be able to have a child, to say to a woman in her, you know, her 20s or her 30s, if you don't want to have kids, then you're probably going, okay, well, it wasn't really a thing for me. But if you haven't thought of it, like, let alone if you want to, if you haven't even thought about it, I don't think, I honestly don't believe that our society quite, well, a big part of our society doesn't quite get how devastating.
Absolutely. Or just
that sentence, that small sentence.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's chucked around a lot. I mean, I talk to so many women with PCOS now who have been told that, and it's just not true at all. And also, like, for me, properly diagnosed at 21, and the doctor said, oh, and also if you want to have a baby, do it now. And I was like, I was pretty set on not having children, but if I'm being told that I can't and I had to do it now, well, then maybe I should.
And you're 21.
And I'm not ready, and I've got other things I want to do, but maybe I'll just do it. And then I'm thinking, now that I'm 30, imagine if I had of, and all the things that would have been different. I've spoken about this before, that I find it really irresponsible, you know, and you're making huge calls, or people who have been told they can't, so they don't bother trying. And if they desperately want a baby, it's just about how you try and how you, you know, kind of get to the bottom of it all. But if you're just told you're not, you just give up, and that's miserable. I mean, for some people, it's their, like, calling in life is to have children, and... Ugh. And 10% of women have it, so it's really, really common.
Yeah, and there's really not, like, the amount of people that seem to have it,
that allegedly have it,
walking around there saying that they're Maoris, but also Samoan chiefs, and they've got PCOS. Who are you, Hayley Sprout? But the amount of people who have this condition, compared to the amount of research...
I know.
That is done on it. Like, you kind of have to laugh.
Yeah.
Because it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Right?
And the thing that's also crazy about it is the way to learn about it. I mean, thank God for the internet. But the way to truly get to the bottom of your health condition, whether it's PCOS or anything else, costs money.
Yeah.
And that was the thing for me. Like, I ended up seeing all these people, and had the privilege of having the money to pay for that. But that's not the case. And, you know, every specialist is $500 for 30 minutes, and you're like, who has that money?
Yeah. What do you do with your frustrations with that? I'm going to ask a follow-up question to this as well. But mm-hmm. what do you do with your frustrations in those moments? It's not like you're a champion for a cause. Like, this is your shit.
Yeah. I think I just try to put it in perspective. For me, like, I'm not dying. It's never going to kill. You know, I do try to just get a grip on the perspective of the situation. And, you know, my mum always says, like, give yourself 5 minutes and then move on. You know, so if I wake up on a day where particularly I'm feeling PCOS-y or I've been on a diet for 2 months and I haven't budged and I feel like I'm starving myself to, you know, try to move a kg, I just have 5 minutes of being wild about it, and I've got a temper and I'll scream and I'll run and I'll punch and everything, and then you've just got to put it in perspective of the world, and that it's, you're alive, I'm healthy, it's fine, no one's asked me to lose this weight, you know, like it's just kind of trying to get a grip on the reality of the things around you that are a bit more sort of tangible than this PCOS that just seems to be stuffing everything up.
I think that's great advice, though, like taking 5 minutes and just embracing how you're feeling.
Wallow, like poor me is what I just do for 5 minutes.
And that's
no
okay.
No one gets it.
Yeah. Like that's you know, it's like, if you've got this thing, if you've got anything and you want to spend 5 minutes at the start of the day screaming, fuck the world, I think that's great.
Yeah, it does help as long as you have the ability to stop. Mm. And have some water and go for a walk or something and then just let it go. Mm. And laugh. Just have a little laugh. I mean, dealing with a moustache, it's funny. You've got to laugh, you know?
At least you can grow one properly. I'm still struggling after all these years. My follow-up question is, and I've asked this of a few guests who have done what you've done, have talked honestly about their experiences and then had people with similar experiences come to them. Mm-hmm. There's a weight to that. Mm. What do you do when you have had someone disclose their own personal experience? How do you deal with that? What do you do for yourself?
I mean, most of the time people would come to me about PCOS stuff because I've made work about it and I talk about it quite a lot. It's funny, like when I talk about my social media inbox, it's truly a mix of like leery creeps and like desperate women being like, I watched your doco.
Oh my God.
So I'm like sifting through going, okay, her, hey mate, like da da da. But I feel like at this point, because it frustrated me so much and I've gathered so much information, I genuinely have like a pool of really trusted things that I feel like I know, and I'm not even embarrassed to say, like, I know this to be true about PCOS, and I just share everything, that every sort of resource, every helpful blog, podcast, website, person, eating plan, everything, I just share it all, and then just keep encouraging them to like talk with their friends, because that was the biggest thing, was me going, I'm gonna make a doco about PCOS. Does any of my friends got PCOS? And it was like, and I was like, I didn't even know, you know? And now it's so much easier because you can go have a little yarn. And when you have your 5 minutes, you could do it with someone else and really have a vent about the woes of it.
Is there anything, we asked this of all, I guess, is there anything you would like to share in the shower?
It's a funny sentence. No, I mean, I feel like I've really enjoyed this chat and it's covered lots of things. I don't often just sit down with someone and talk about well-being for a long time. And yeah, that's my thing always. It's just like talking about everything and anything. And I overshare, and sometimes it like will kick back at me and I'll regret sharing so much. But I just don't like, I don't want to have to carry things on my own. So having chats like this show, it's in itself, is such a great, it's such an amazing thing. And it's something that we just wouldn't have had years ago when we're all in our showers
eating chicken. Can I ask, you've got any advice for any woman who is listening to this and that thing that you said before really struck a chord of the visual stuff, like the feeling like they can't talk about it because it's going to horrify the people around them.
Yeah.
So like anything that we can say to any listeners or anyone who's got someone who's just like, oh, no, it's all ugly women's stuff and oh, yeah. gross and oh.
I mean, truly, there's one side of things where I'm like, yes, there's some great tangible ways that you can help reduce these things that annoy you. But in the other way, I'm like, look around. Like, we all look completely different. I barely meet a woman now that doesn't have a bit of facial hair that she probably wouldn't want to be there. I'm like, it just is not, it's just not important. Mm. And it means nothing to your self-worth. And I have thought about it more than anyone else has. You know, people don't go home and go like, Hayley's sideburns are out of control. I'm thinking that.
Yeah.
Like nobody else is.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, like working in television, I've got people up in my face all the time.
Yeah, your face is on buses.
I know.
You can't even go to work without seeing, you try and not look at your face and then it just drives past you.
I would get into makeup chairs and apologize about this acne I used to have and they'll be like, that's fine. Like people just don't care as much as you care. So it's like if you can choose to let some things go, it's that.
Is that your anxiety kicking in? Like when you're apologising for past acne that no one can see?
I know. Absolutely. Oh, sorry, I used to have acne. Oh, I've got PCO. Oh, so it's all related to insulin. And I'm on this diet at the moment, so it's sort of sorted it out. But my skin's a little bit... And they're like, shh, stop moving your mouth. I need to put lipstick on it. Get a grip. No one can see it.
Yeah. Hashtag feminism. Stop moving your mouth. We need to put lipstick on it.
Less talky.
Less talky-talky, mate. More lippy-lippy.
More pretty-pretty. Feminism. Hayley Sproul.
Dear Hayley Sproul, I listen to you in the shower.
On behalf of all women.
Oh, God. I'm so sorry. I'm so appreciate you coming in here, and I'm so sorry we've ruined your career.
Thank you so much. No, I was riding that wave too long, I think. 3 TV shows, it's greedy. Let's tear it down.
Yeah, it's very Kiwi. You had it coming, mate.
Yeah.
Hayley Sproul, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, James.
Eating Fried Chicken in a Shower was produced for RNZ by Charlie Bleakley and Fruit and Nuts Limited, and presented by me, James Nokise. The engineer was Blair Stagpool. The executive producers for RNZ were Justin Gregory and Tim Watkin. Subscribe to our podcast however you just found this podcast. Or, if you're listening on the radio, go to RNZ's podcast page and look for the chicken. And when you rate us, only give us 5 stars. Remember, more stars, more chicken. And if you want to share your safe space or comfort food, tweet me at James Nokise. If you need support, text 1737. Or for more resources on mental health, check the Fried Chicken webpage at rnz.co.nz. If you're experiencing COVID-19 related mental health issues, go to health.govt.nz and search for COVID-19 mental health and well-being resources. We'll also link to it on the RNZ page. Faftai lava, mate wa.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.